Our scripture is from the book of Ruth, from both the third chapter and the fourth chapter, selected verses. Let us listen to the words of this story found in Ruth. Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, I need to seek some security for you, so that it may be well with you, that it may be shalom with you. Now here is our kinsman Boaz, with whose young women you have been working. See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now wash and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." She said to her, "All that you tell me, I will do." So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When they came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without next of kin, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has borne him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom and became his nurse. The women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. And this is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. How many of you remember in elementary school, you get out a little piece of paper and you write on it, "Will you be my girlfriend?" Or, "Will you be my boyfriend?" Two boxes. One is yes and one is no. Please check one. You know, that takes a risk to write that down and then to hand it to somebody. Did you hear the story about a little boy named Jimmy? He decided to take the risk, and so he wrote it down. "Judy, will you be my girlfriend? Check one of these boxes, yes or no." He gave the little piece of paper to Judy, and then he just held his breath a little bit. She said, "I'd have to get back with you on this." He said, "Okay." So the next day, she handed him an envelope. And inside the envelope, there was a little note from Judy. "Before I check a box, will you please fill out this questionnaire my father has provided?" Not a bad idea. Well, that poor little fellow took a risk of faith, didn't he? And that's what we're talking about today, risky faith. And you know, actually, you know, faith itself is risky. And, well, faith involves three things. It involves a choice, and it involves a commitment, and it involves an adventure. But faith can't control outcomes. There's always a sense of uncertainty in how outcomes may be. But what we do know is this, is that this story of Ruth is a story about risky faith. In the very beginning, we talked about this last week, Ruth has made a decision that she will not allow her mother-in-law to go back to Bethlehem all by herself. Childless, bereft of family. She will not allow her mother-in-law to go back in her deep, deep sorrow, but she will accompany her mother-in-law. There was a choice. Matter of fact, her mother-in-law said, "You know, you need to stay here and seek security for yourself here. You do not have to do this." But she said, "Please permit it, because I choose to do it. You know, your land will be my land. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God." And, well, she made a promise to be with her even beyond death, because she said, "Where you die and be buried, that's where I will be buried as well. I will never leave you. Ruth exercised risky faith. She decided that she was going to go with her mother-in-law, not really knowing how she was going to be taken care of, how both of them were going to be taken care of. Imagine this, two women going back to Bethlehem, one who had left Bethlehem because of the great famine and had gone to Moab and heard word that the famine was over and she could go back now. But she had lost everything, so she was going back, as she said, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara," which means bitter. I've lost everything. So you've got this Naomi, who's from Bethlehem, but going back without anything, and you have a foreigner, a Moabite, who was not even permitted to go to the temple. Moabites were foreigners. They were outsiders. But you got this. So you got this mother-in-law who's lost everything going back, and accompanying her is her daughter-in-law, who's a Moabite. She's a foreigner. What does she have going for her? Two so-called helpless women going back to Bethlehem. But we don't know what Ruth saw in that situation. We only know that she was willing to take a risk of faith. I will go with you. It was a decision. It was also a commitment. Because sooner or later, once you make a choice, then you have to show the commitment. I know sometimes a couple will come in to me, they want to talk about marriage. And I say, "Well, hold it, just a second. Okay, so you're going to get married." They said, "Yeah, we're talking about it." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. Are you just talking about it, or are you going to get married?" So, well, we're going to get married, we just don't know when. I said, "Well, that's okay. Have you got a ring yet?" "No, he hadn't gotten a ring yet." "So you don't have a date, and you don't have a ring, you're just talking." They said, yeah, we're just talking. I said, "Well, that's good. Go back and talk some more. And when you're ready to make a commitment, come back here." A commitment is a date and a ring. A commitment is a packed suitcase saying, "We're leaving." A commitment is actually taking that first step out the door to go to a new place. And that's what Ruth did. She made a commitment. And then as soon as she got to this place that she'd never been to before, it was an adventure. She didn't know how they were going to make ends meet. So she went to the fields to glean, because there was a law that made provision for poor people to have food. That in the fields where the crops were, the people who had the fields and harvested the crops were to intentionally leave some there for the poor to come and glean so they could have something. And so Ruth would go to the fields. So for her, faith was a choice, it was a commitment, and it was an adventure, because she's out here in these fields with people she doesn't even know. But very early on, we discover something. She's in the field where a man named Boaz is overseeing the work. And this is where it gets really fascinating. Because we find out that Boaz takes notice of Ruth. Finds out who she is. That she's left her home to come back and accompany her mother-in-law. That she's out here from sun up to sun down working in the field so that they may have something to eat. He sees her loyalty. Sees her hesedness. We talked about, what is hesedness? It's steadfast love. It's loyalty. It's faithfulness. Another word is kindness in action. He sees her. He respects her, and he notices that she is a foreigner. She's a woman. She's alone. He looks around. He sees that he needs to take care of her. So he tells her, "You only glean in my field so I can watch over you and make sure you're safe." And then he actually helps her with the provision that she has by telling his servants to make sure she had an extra portion. So we find out early on that something's going on here, that Boaz recognizes Ruth, and he sort of has his eyes on her. He's looking after her. Now, Ruth comes back, and she comes and she says, "Look, this is what we have, and there's provision for them, for both these women." And as time goes on, she tells her mother-in-law, you know, I'm working in the field of Boaz. She doesn't know Boaz. How this happens, I don't know. But Naomi figures out who Boaz is. And here's what she finds out. Boaz is a kinsman of her deceased husband, Elimelech. Now, that may not mean a whole lot to you, but it meant a lot to her, and here's the reason why. Because there was also a provision in the law, in the Torah. There was a provision to take care of widows, to take care of the lineage of families when they were bereft of children. And here's how it would work. That if a man died and left his wife, and they were childless, it was called the Levirate law. And it had to do with his next of kin, if he had a brother, would have the responsibility to come and to take the widow as his wife and to provide for her, make sure she had what she needed, and to raise a child through her that would continue the lineage of his brother. It's a weird law, and as far as I know, it's not on the books now. But the reason it was on the books back then is because there was a special provision that widows were to be taken care of. They were very vulnerable. They were without the ability to bring in food. So this provision was made not only for the widow to have security, but provision was also made for this family that their lineage could be continued. And so here you have Naomi. She's lost her husband. Boaz is kin to Elimelech. Now, Ruth is Naomi's daughter-in-law, who is young, who is able to provide a child. And the Levirate law would cover this as an okay relationship that Boaz could take Ruth to be his wife. Ruth could take Boaz to be her husband. They could raise a child. The lineage of Elimelech would continue. And do you remember what Naomi said to Ruth at the very beginning? I'm afraid that if you come back with me, there's no way that I can guarantee your shelter or your provision. I want what's best for you, so stay here. And Ruth said, no, I'm going to go with you. Naomi always wanted to make sure her daughter-in-law was going to be okay, that she could be cared for. Now she began to see a way that her daughter-in-law could receive care, the security being in Boaz. Now this is a love story. This is a story that has many levels, believe me, many levels to it. One of them is a love story. So Naomi begins to work behind the scenes. And she realizes what time of year it is. It's the time of the harvest, bringing in the harvest and the winnowing of the grain, where the chaff is separated from the wheat, and there's they're working all day long, and they're having a party late at night because this is an occasion of great joy when they have the harvest, and as they're winnowing and separating the chaff from the wheat, they're gathering provision and they're having a celebration, and it's a party. And there is a lot going on. And it's going to be into the wee hours of the morning. So Naomi says, Ruth, I want you to get dressed up. I want you to look really nice. I want you to look your best. And I want you to go to where Boaz is. And I want you to wait. And I want you to stay during that celebration. And then when he lays down to go to sleep, I want you to go and to lay next to him and to uncover his feet. And when he wakes up, he will tell you what to do. Now what Naomi is trying to do is to get these two together. And this is risky. It's risky on many different levels. First of all, this is scandalous that a woman would go to this place and lie down and uncover someone's feet, which was laid with symbolic meaning all over the place. We won't get into that. But Ruth says, I will do what you tell me to do. And here's where we're getting down to risky faith. And so what happens is Boaz wakes up after midnight and he says, who are you? And Ruth is there. And basically what Ruth is doing and what she says is, what am I doing? This is really about what you should be doing. You should be taking me as your wife. Now that is bold. And Boaz is older because what does he say? He says, my goodness, there's young men all over the place, and you come to me. And then he begins to think about her reputation because he knows her reputation is clean. And he wants to permit it to stay that way. So he says, remain here before you go home again. I want to protect you. Make sure that others don't see you. And then, of course, he gives extra provision for her to take home. But I want you to see where this whole story really pivots on these two verses in the book of Ruth. In the third chapter, when Boaz wakes up, here's what he says. Who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your cloak over your servant, for you are next of kin. Now, for him to spread his cloak or his skirt over her wasn't just to keep her warm. It was to indeed say, you shall be my wife. Spreading the skirt over her was the taking of her as his wife. Now that phrase, spread your skirt over me or spread your cloak over me, the word for skirt or cloak can also be translated wings. Go back to the second chapter of Ruth, second chapter, 12th verse. When Boaz sees Ruth and her loyalty to her mother-in-law, he says this to her, may the Lord reward you for your deeds. May you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings, under whose skirt, but it's translated wings here, under whose wings you have come for refuge. So you see what she does? She's basically saying, from the very beginning, you wanted me to have my full reward from the Lord, under whose wings I would find refuge. Congratulations. The wings he is providing is coming from you, as you spread your wings over me or your cloak over me. That's Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. So she's basically saying, the ball now is in your court. I have laid it all out on the line. She took the risk. Now we know that, heck, you know, this could go, you know, either way, but already we're pulling for this, aren't we? And already we kind of really know how it's going to turn out because both these are good people. Both these people are kind people. Both these people are people of hesedness, of steadfast love and devotion and loyalty, and have good reputations. So we it's like a movie. We still got to see it play out, but we know which way we want it to go, and Well, if we're going to bet on things, we would bet that it's going to work out. So we have a little extra time to wait because what does Boaz say? He says, well, I'm not really the very next of kin. There is another. Let us see if he will redeem you. The kinsman redeemer, and that's the word used, was the one who would come and to take a woman to be his wife, and along with that would buy all the property and would take care of all the children and would raise the family in the name of the deceased husband. There was a responsibility that came from being the kinsman redeemer. There was a responsibility, and there was a choice. You did have a choice about it. So Boaz finds out this other man is really the closest of next of kin. And he finds out that this is now his opportunity. But his choice is no. Because it's just too much responsibility for him. It's too much. And he says no. And then it's done. It's done. And so now Boaz is free to take her as his wife. And they have a child, Obed. Now, this isn't just a story with a happy ending. This is a story with a profound, profound message. Matter of fact, there are many layers of messages here. I just throw out a couple to you. But Boaz and Ruth have a child, and the child's name is Obed. We just heard it. Child's name is Obed. And then in the fourth chapter, we find out that Obed becomes the father of Jesse, and Jesse becomes the father of David. And I'm not just talking about David. I'm talking about the king, the one who would be King David, the greatest king in the history of Israel. The golden age of Israel was the kingdomship, the reign of King David. You realize what's happened at the end of the story? We didn't see a lot about God intervening. We didn't see a lot about God speaking this or speaking that. We know God was somewhere at work because people are finding favor with one another, and that's not by accident. But God doesn't seem to be a primary character in this story because we just don't hear a lot about him. But he's active behind the scenes. And do you see what God has done? God has a profound message. Because now in the lineage of King David, one of the most famous kings, within the lineage, there is a Moabite. There is a foreigner. Which means this. God is the God of all peoples. Not just some peoples and not just of those he said would be his people. He is the God of foreigners who are to be welcomed, who are to be a part of the community, who are to have access to the temple, who are not to be excluded. And God has done something through this one lady by the name of Ruth, a widow, who had nothing going for her. And she took a risk of faith by saying, Naomi, I'll go with you. And what happens? They both went back to Bethlehem empty-handed. They both went back to Bethlehem bereft of family. But at the end of the story, they're both full. There is replenishment of what they have lost. There is a happy ending, but there's a powerful message. The message of how God honors risky faith. And that doesn't mean that everything we try is going to work out. I'm not saying that. Because faith is all about not knowing the outcomes. Faith is always an uncertainty. It's always, well, knowing that we can't control how things ultimately will work out. But faith is something that helps us to understand the nature of the security we do have. Our faith is not ultimately in our own actions, but our faith is ultimately within the character of God. And who is God? God is the kind one. God is at least as kind as we are. God's kindness. We trust in the God of kindness. And that's why I say many, many times, if not today, then tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then the next day. If not the next day, then someday. But one day we know that the kindness of God, the goodness of God, the mercy of God will be all over the place and His will be done. In the meantime, we, His people, walk by faith, trusting in the God of kindness. And we look after one another. And we care for one another. And do you see what God did? God made His kindness known to people by choosing kind people. God used kind people who were kind to others to bestow His kindness. God can only reach people through people. And He wants to reach people with His kindness. Will you take a step of faith in kindness? Will you risk reaching out to someone? You never know how God might use that. And so we simply have an invitation today to know God's kindness. To know God's kindness, because we can't offer what we don't have. God is for us, not against us. St. Paul said in Romans chapter 8, as God is for us, then who can be against us? He who did not withhold His own Son, will He not also with Him give us everything else? Who will separate us from the love of Christ or from the kindness of God? Will hardship or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? No, for I'm convinced that neither death nor life nor angels nor rulers nor things present nor things to come nor powers nor height nor depth nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us ultimately from the love of God in Christ Jesus or from the kindness of God. We can take the risk of faith, not because we trust in ourselves, but we trust in the God who is kind and good and loving and merciful. The invitation is to come and to receive God's kindness and then to go forth and to share it with others. Let us stand.